This is the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
And welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, where every Saturday morning we are here doing life together. So glad you joined us. Dr. Linda is out today, but I'm Chris. If you'd like to keep in contact with Dr. Linda, you can do so on Facebook by going to her Facebook page, Dr. Linda Mental, author and speaker. Plus, you can follow Dr. Linda on Twitter, at Dr. Linda Helps. And remember, you can hear this program again and read Dr. Linda's blog by going to myfaithradio.com. Donna Van Leer is a New York Times best-selling author and a good friend of Dr. Linda's. Recently at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee, Dr. Linda had an opportunity to meet up with Donna, and the topic was child abuse, the subject of Donna's latest novel, The Good Dream. Let's go down to the floor of the NRB convention in Nashville with Dr. Linda's special guest, Donna Van Leer.
You know when you meet someone and you can tell you'll be instant great friends? That's what happened when I first met our guest on today's program, Donna Van Leer. In all honesty, I didn't know she was a highly successful author and gifted conference speaker. I didn't know that several of her top-selling titles have been adapted for the TV screen with movies on CBS, Lifetime, and Hallmark. I certainly didn't know that she had been so highly decorated with awards for her books and her movies. But what I did know instantly was that Donna Van Leer is a woman who loves God, loves her family, and made such a tremendous impact on me that we just had to be good friends.
Well, thank you. And as you were reading that, I realized this is where we met. We were on a seminar together.
And we are friends. We both serve on a board, a national board, for a ministry called House of Hope. Well, listen, I want to talk today about your book. And I have to tell you, the book is called The Good Dream. And you gave me a copy of that book when I met you, and I was on an airplane. And I never do this, but I actually read that book from cover to front when I was on a very long trip to California. And I haven't ever done that with a book. It was so compelling. It kept my interest. It was so well written. And the emotional side of that story really grabbed the reader. So I'm excited that we're going to be talking about that. But it is a difficult subject for people to talk about.
It is. It is a very difficult subject. It's actually about a young woman. She's a single woman. She's 30 in East Tennessee in 1950, so she's considered an old maid. But something starts stealing her garden. She sets all sorts of traps and then comes to realize it's not an animal after all, but it's a feral little boy who's very hungry. And then the more he comes to her house, the more things that she discovers about him.
I'm hoping that as we talk about what she discovers is not going to ruin the book for those of you who haven't read it. So even if we're telling you a little bit more than you're going to get, because you don't really get the idea of what's happening until well into the book. But
right.
It's such an important topic, and this is a show on relationships, so we really do want to cover it. But why did you write a novel about an abused child? Because that's what we come to learn during the reading of the book in a rural setting of Tennessee.
Because it's still so prevalent, even today. I'm in my 40s, and back before I even entered kindergarten, I was molested by a neighbor, so it was prevalent even back then. And times haven't changed, they just keep getting more dangerous.
And that's true. And let me just give a few statistics, and I want to ask you a little bit about that. But one in every 100 children in the United States was abused in the year of 2012, so that's one in 100. That's a lot of kids. The majority of those children now were victims of neglect, but in terms of actual abuse, the 25% of that number were victims of abuse, including physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. And an average of nearly 5 children die every day as a result of child abuse in our country today. So tell us a little bit about the journey of that for you, because it isn't something that certainly the church talked about, much less the culture.
Well, and they still don't really talk about it.
Why is that, Donna?
I don't know. I have no idea. I never hear about it in church. And it's not a topic that you can bring up if you're at a women's Bible study,
right,
or a women's tea. It's not something that you just say, oh, hey, by the way. It's nothing that you can bring up.
But when you've shared your story, have you had other women come up to you and say, hey, that happened to me?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every time. Every time I share it in a public place, people, men and women, come up to me and tell me about it. it can be devastating to a person's life, because for over 25 years, I lived the blame and shame game. I was 5 years old and I blamed myself.
Which is typical of kids who are abused, because you don't know how to make sense of that when you're a child.
Right.
You've got this person that you trust and that you believe are there to guide you and to provide some kind of safety for you, and they're violating the boundaries of that. And so what that does is it produces what you're talking about, that sort of shame and somehow I'm at fault. So how else did that affect you as you were growing up living with that?
You know, I had the hardest time accepting hugs, even from women. It was just very difficult for me. And I've met other men and women who are in the same boat. It's just really, really hard to accept something as gentle and as simple as a hug.
And how do you think of yourself then when you're a teenager and you're going out and you're looking for that intimate partner that you may have someday? How do you begin to think of yourself as in terms of your worthiness or your self-esteem? What does it do when you've been abused as a child?
Well, for me personally, I know a lot of people react differently, but for me personally, I felt pretty used up, pretty trashed by it all. Even though I was five and you don't have a full concept of what took place, I did know that what took place was wrong.
Right. And then you hear that from every person who's been a victim of any kind of child abuse, that somehow they just knew it didn't feel well. And yet, I want to say for the people who are listening, there are times, too, when children are abused, and it's done, and this is going to sound strange, but it's done in kind of a loving way with the abuse, that they really have such an issue of bringing it forward, even though there's a part of them that knows it's wrong. There's this sort of weird love attached to it, and it isn't this mean. There's the type where it's mean, and it's yelling and cursing and telling the person that they're worthless and horrible.
Right.
And then there's this other kind that they're sort of loving them while they're violating those boundaries, and that makes it even more confusing to the child.
Right. And even though that was a long distance from one house to the other for me to cross over that field and get back to my house, I don't even remember it. I don't remember going home that day. But I do remember that once I got there, it was something that I shouldn't bring up. You know, what freedom we could give to kids at any age. Just such freedom, knowing that you can say it, you can talk about it, you can tell someone. I could have easily told my mother that, but I didn't.
Yeah, and I want to just make the point that sometimes when a child does tell the mom or the dad what's going on, that sometimes because of that fear of being having to maybe make a decision to leave or having to go get some kind of help, there's a lot of fear involved for that parent who finds out, who doesn't always then turn around and protect the child as well. In the best cases, the parent will help get some help, get the child out of that situation for the moment until the abuser can be helped, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to deal with the anger and the hurt towards the parent who didn't do the type of help that you were hoping that they would get.
Right.
So this is a very complicated issue, and I think what I loved about your book is it really did give a psychological side of what that's like and the sort of the making of that whole abusive system that people are involved in, and then the difficulty of bringing that up and bringing that out into the light.
Right. You know, and in the book, I was not gratuitous about it. I did want to make the reader's skin crawl a little bit so that they would assume what is happening. I wanted that to happen because it's very real.
I've talked to probably hundreds of people over the years that have been abused in therapy, and when I was reading that, I was going, yes. Yes, this is what it's like. Yes, this is a good picture of what people think, what people feel, how it plays out in terms of their interpersonal relationships, how families react, how outsiders react. The whole scare of ever telling anybody, the secretiveness of the abuse is always something that people have to struggle with as well. So I think if people read that book, they'll get a really good picture of what it might feel like from a lot of different perspectives in terms of helping. So we're hoping that that's part of what helps when people read it. And one of the things I want to do is just take a moment and let people know, because we always try to inform you a little bit on the show of some of the signs of child abuse, and then we'll come back to the book.
Okay.
But one of the things you need to look for with a child who's been abused is that the child usually shows sudden changes in behavior, and particularly kids in school, you'll notice some changes of behavior. If the child has not received help for physical or medical problems, those need to be brought to the parent's attention. Sometimes a physician will pick up on these issues, or a nurse in a school will notice bruises, or will hear a child talking about some sexual boundary that's been violated. A lot of times we'll see kids will have learning problems or difficulty concentrating in the school that we know can't be attributed to any other thing. The child sometimes is what we call hypervigilant, always waiting for something bad to happen. It's almost like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop because something bad has got to happen because that's been the experience. And because kids who are abused don't always know when they're going to be abused, they're always waiting to see if it's going to go well that night or if it's going to be something terrible. And then sometimes with kids who lack adult supervision, that's sort of a red flag for parents who are looking. An overly compliant child, a passive child, a withdrawn child, or a child that comes to school or other activities early, stays late, and doesn't want to go home. Mm-hmm. Those are some other signs. So if you think you know somebody like that, or you think that you might be seeing something like that, it is actually the law for people to report child abuse, even if they suspect. Mm-hmm. And you can report and you can be anonymous when you report, so that's always a good thing too.
Right.
So say a little bit more about how you think the church overall has responded to child abuse when they find out or they know that this is a problem of 1 in 100 children.
Well, I haven't heard anything about churches really stepping up per se. I know there are some programs for women who've had abortions,
right,
for them to kind of plug into the church that way, because many of them have a hard time accepting forgiveness, mm-hmm, as well. You know, and it's the same case with victims of abuse. They have a hard time accepting forgiveness. But I don't know of any churches personally that have any such programs. And if you could have a show of hands in a congregation, there would just be countless people who would be in there who would raise their hands who were victims of abuse.
So it's a real need in the church,
yeah,
that we
absolutely
need to be sort of helping people recognize the signs and maybe providing a safe way for people, mm-hmm, to get help. Were you hoping to bring awareness to the issue by writing that, or was this just something inside of you that you just wanted to tell because of your own personal story?
A little of both. I did want to bring awareness to it because I wanted to show the side of bravery as well in the part of Ivory, who is this woman who notices these things about this little boy. Oftentimes it does take an act of courage and an act of bravery to step forward in faith to try to help a child, you know, try to help a victim of any sort of abuse. So I wanted to show that aspect as well. So yeah, I did it for a couple of reasons. They always say kind of write about what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had gone through so many of those emotions and feelings anyway as a child. So I wanted to kind of bring those to light. And I did get several angry emails, and they were
really
all from Christians, actually.
Really?
Every single one of them were from Christians. Several of them said, we don't even want to think about abuse, let alone read about it.
Wow.
Yeah, it
wow
was staggering for me. And usually, if I ever get a nasty email, I'll just discard it, because that takes too much energy to respond to somebody like that. But for all of those emails, I did respond, because it was too personal at that point. They said they didn't want to read about the abuser, and that the abuser shouldn't have used any language or been as hate-filled. And I said, sorry,
yeah,
that's the way they are.
That's right, and that's just real life,
right,
and presenting the real life situation. And I thought you did it in a way that was very sensitive.
Right.
But
it,
that kind of frightens me that the church wants to put their head in the sand, because how are we going to help people?
Right.
We should be the people who are giving the life message, which is the message of your book, that there's redemption on the other side of this. And look at what God is doing in your life, Donna, how he's using something that was so horrific,
mm-hmm,
to then bring some hope and bring some, right, the side of forgiveness and redemption to people, so that they can move on with their lives and they can get past something horrific like this and not be victims of their past.
Right. And I'll tell you, the turning point for me, Linda, was because I told you I had such a hard time accepting forgiveness. At 5 years old, couldn't forgive myself for years and years, 25 years. And I was driving through Nashville one day. I took a wrong turn, and I ended up outside a schoolhouse, and the children were out on the playground, and this little girl, she was dressed all in pink from head to toe. She just started jumping up and down. She wasn't on a pogo stick, nothing to jump over. She was just filled with joy and jumping, and her joy was so contagious, another little girl came alongside of her and, you know, was jumping with her. And I thought, that is the cutest little picture, you know, of childhood and innocence. And as I drove off, a thought instantly hit me. What if that little girl went home, she went to the neighbor's house, and the father of that house or an older brother in that home molested her? How could that sweet, hopping, innocent little girl ever think that that was her fault? And it was as if God spoke to me and said, that was you. Mm. You were that sweet, hopping, innocent little girl. And yet I blamed myself for all those years.
I know, and that's what people do. And yet it's exactly what you say. It's like there's nothing you can do to stop somebody who's bigger than you, mm-hmm. who's in some authority and power over you. There's right. nothing a child can do to stop that.
Right.
You know, I had a moment in my own life with that forgiveness kind of scenario where I was praying one day, and I think I was up at an altar or something, and it seems like I was going up every Sunday to keep asking forgiveness mm-hmm. about the same thing, you know, and I thought, I know this isn't scriptural, but somehow I'm just not getting past it. Mm-hmm. And I sort of had this, it wasn't a vision, but just sort of this view of Jesus on the cross, and almost Jesus saying to me, I died for this.
Mm-hmm.
What more do I have to do
right.
to show you that this is gone and this is past?
Right.
And that was sort of an aha moment for me where I let it go and I thought, he died for this. Why am I not accepting that forgiveness that he actually died
mm-hmm.
for?
Right.
So helping people with the self-forgiveness, it seems like, and it was, I don't know if this was your experience, it seemed like it's easier sometimes for people to forgive the abuser than to really forgive themselves.
Right, absolutely. But when I got old enough, I thought, well, he really should pay for that. You know, he's got to pay. And when I got older, I thought, he never paid for that. Well, who paid for it? I did. I was the one paying for that for all those years. And it was almost, you, just like you were talking about with Jesus saying, how many times do I have to die for this?
Yeah.
It was as if Jesus said, I paid for this. I paid for this. And also when I got older, I realized that, you know, just as the Israelites were always complaining and moaning and groaning, it says in Scripture that God was there distressed, mm-hmm. in their distress. Because for years I always thought, well, why didn't the floor just somehow open up or the walls fall in on, you know, what was happening? Well, the fact is God was there, distressed, in my distress. There were two souls in that room, and he was pursuing both of us.
Mm.
And he continues to pursue souls.
It really is when we're in those moments of suffering,
right?
Where we really are saying to ourselves, Jesus is with me in the suffering.
Yeah, he's there. God is there. He is distressed. In our distress, he is there, and he is still pursuing. That it all came down for me. He was pursuing both of us. I chose to reach out to God. My molester never did.
And I love that. I love the fact that you're saying he's pursuing the person who molested.
Right. Absolutely.
He cares enough about that person, and sometimes that's really hard. So how do you move from wanting the revenge or the retaliation or something, coming to that point in Scripture where it tells us to pray for those who have despitefully used us and to love our enemies, and that part in Matthew 5 that is so hard, I think, to live out. How do you move? How do you make that shift?
Well, you know, it never happened in my adult lifetime, because I got a phone call one day, and it was from my mom, and she said, well, have you heard? And I said, well, no, what? And he had actually killed his wife.
Oh my gosh.
And then turned the gun on himself.
Oh my.
So I never got to that point in my adult life of actually praying for him, although I had forgiven him. When I saw those two little girls hopping, I drove down that road and I just spoke aloud in the car, I forgive you. Not because you've ever asked me for forgiveness, not because you would ever want it, but I forgive you because I don't want to be in bondage to
you.
Yeah,
I was going to say, how important is that to your healing? How important is it to make that step? Do you think that's absolutely essential for people to make that step in order to heal?
I think so. I mean, it was for me. It totally was for me. For me to say, okay, I'm done with it. This is totally between you and God. And it was a bondage. And so
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, verbally said, I don't want to be in bondage to you.
Yeah. And not have somebody have that kind of power over you anymore.
Right.
By releasing them to the Lord. And then mm-hmm. I think what we do is we let the Lord deal with the revenge or the judgment part of that, because that's what the Lord does.
Right.
Although it's hard for us as people, we want judgment
yes,
on
hard.
That person. We want
them to
see
pay.
It.
You want them to pay.
And to let right. that, and to really release that to the Lord. I think in the number of people I've seen in therapy, once they can release that and say, you know what, Lord, if they never get judgment here and they get away with this, so to speak, the rest mm-hmm. of their life, I'm just going to trust that one day that person's going to stand before you and they will answer to you. There
right.
will be ultimate judgment
right.
for somebody in that place.
And you know what's sad, Linda, is that there are a lot of people walking around who still want dead people to pay. They're still in bondage to dead people. Those folks are gone. And Jesus said, I came that you would have abundant life.
Right.
So you can't live an abundant life when you are in bondage to someone.
And you're holding on to bitterness and unforgiveness in your heart. I think we know psychologically that that blocks things in the physical body, but we know spiritually it blocks the real flowing of the blessing and the joy that you saw on that little girl's
face. Yes, absolutely.
It blocks that when you're holding on to forgiveness or unforgiveness and bitterness.
Right.
Well, we're talking with Donna Van Leer about her book, The Good Dream. If you're struggling with unforgiveness towards something somebody did, the power that forgiveness has to release you into moving into what God wants. And Donna, it's just so amazing how God is working all things.
Mm-hmm.
He's using something horrific in your life. He's working it for His good.
Right, right. And you know, Ephesians says the same thing. He will work everything out for His glory. Everything.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean the little things.
Right.
You know, the simple things,
yeah.
The clean things.
It's,
you know,
all things.
Right.
We used to, the Donut Man used to sing that when I'd listen with my kids. We used to listen to these Donut Man music things, and he'd go, "How many things?" And all the kids would yell, "All things."
Right.
Well, for your good.
It's such a simple lesson.
Yeah.
You know, you learn it as a child and you forget it as you get older, you know, but it's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't want to release
Think
the,
like the Donut Man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I also was thinking about this old Phil Kagi song. Song that we heard a lot played when people were dealing with abortions, but it's this old song about who will stand up for the little ones, helpless and half abandoned.
Mm.
And he wrote this beautiful song back in the, I don't know, maybe the 80s or 70s even, asking the church, who's going to stand up for the little ones?
Right.
They're helpless.
Right.
They're half abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't talk about what has happened and we don't provide a way out for people, you know, we have the hope. We have the message.
That's right.
And that's, say a little bit about the sort of the redemptive part of the story.
One of the sweetest emails that I got came from a man. And in it, he said, "I wish I could be more like Ivory." I thought that was sweet, you know, coming from a man who saw the bravery that was in her and the great courage and the faith that it took to really go after this problem.
Yeah, she had to withstand a lot of people pushing against her.
She did.
And she had to break the cultural silence.
Right.
And she had to love someone who is unlovely.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being in a service at Brooklyn Tabernacle Church with Jim Cimbala. He was talking one Sunday about all the different people that walk off the street into their church. And he said he had this particularly difficult Sunday where this guy walked up. He was just smelled, and he was homeless. He smelled like urine. He just reeked. He looked horrible. He was filthy, dirty, and he walked up to the front to be prayed for. And Jim said, for a moment, I did a, do I really want to touch this guy? And he smelled so bad. And at that moment, he just sort of saw Jesus standing there, opening his arms to this guy. And the ability to reach out to people who are difficult sometimes or victims or hurting or unlovely.
Right.
And I think the bravery word is such a great word to say, the courage and the bravery of reaching out to someone who needed somebody to love him.
Right. And Ivory, in The Good Dream, she never had the right words to say. She was single.
Right.
She didn't have children. She was the youngest in this family of all boys. So she wasn't familiar with being around children necessarily. But the fact that she was just every day just stepping out in faith. And she never had, like I said, she never had the right things to say necessarily. But it was her love for him.
And maybe that's a great message for anybody single listening today, that, you know, you might feel like, well, I really want to love children and I'm not in a marriage and I don't have a family. But look at the way God puts you in contact with children and maybe even makes a family in the most unexpected way sometimes if you have that love to give to somebody.
Right.
Well, as we close this, Donna, what was the role of love in your own healing? In terms of your own, maybe the love of God, is that what brought you out of that?
It really was, yes, and to experience it in different ways. You know, just to, there's a verse in Galatians that said, God had special plans for me and set me apart for His work. Even before I was born, He called me through His grace. And for the longest time, I had a hard time accepting that verse because I kept saying, well, special plans are for special girls.
Mm.
And when things like, you know, molestation, abuse, anything like that comes on a little girl, it's a hard thing to think of yourself as being special. But the thing is that, you know, before birth.
Mm-hmm.
So God had all these plans for me before I was even born. So there was no plan B. I kept thinking I was going to live a plan B or plan C kind of life. There's never been a plan B kind of life. It's always been a plan A life. with God. He's had the same plan, and he works us through it. You know, we work out our salvation, yeah. and he works us through these things if we can keep taking those steps and keep reaching for him and keep digging in. You know, there's no trite words. There's no easy fixes at all. It's work.
Right.
You work out your salvation.
That's
you
right.
Know, if you go through the Bible, there's a lot of verbs in the Bible. A lot of action verbs. So it's not like you can just sit back on your laurels and think, oh, I'm healed. You yeah. know, the paralytic man by the pools, you know, he had to get up.
Right.
Get up.
Take action.
Yeah, take up your mat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's work on our part as well. But I had to walk in fullness and accept that abundant life. And, you know, Augustine had a great quote. He said that God gives where he finds empty hands.
Mm.
And you can't accept God's grace and his mercy and his forgiveness and his peace if you're carrying around unforgiveness, if you're carrying around bitterness and anger and jealousy and envy. You know, if you're carrying stuff around, you can't accept that full grace of God. So if it means that every day you get out of bed and you say, open your hands and say, here it is, Lord, I'm still holding on to it. I'm still clinging to this. Would you please help me let it go? And for me, it was kind of a daily thing like that. Okay, I'm still thinking about it. It's still there. It's still gnawing away at me. Would you take it today? So, like I said, you have to work it out.
Well, I hope what we've done is we've given people some awareness, first of all, that child abuse is real. Mm-hmm. It's in the church.
Mm-hmm.
The church needs to be talking about it. But that there really is a way out of that victim position. Well, thank you, Donna, for being here. We encourage you to get Donna's book, The Good Dream. She's a wonderful writer, and she's got movies and books and all kinds of things. More than that, she's a wonderful woman of God and just a real treasure to the body of Christ. So see what the enemy meant for bad and for problems, God is using for good. He's using her story. He's using her gifts, her ability to write and communicate to all of us through story is a powerful way to reach all of us that are listening here. Mm-hmm. So we thank you so much for being here.
Dr. Linda Mental with her friend and best-selling author Donna Van Leer. For more insight into the issue of child abuse and at-risk teens, visit Dr. Linda's blog at myfaithradio.com. If you'd like to keep in contact with Dr. Linda, you can do so on Facebook by going to her Facebook page, Dr. Linda Mental, author and speaker. Plus, you can follow Dr. Linda on Twitter at Dr. Linda Helps. And remember, you can hear this program again and read Dr. Linda's blog by going to myfaithradio.com. For Dr. Linda Mental, I'm Chris Weigel. Thanks to our producer, Matt Garcia, and we'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember, we are doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
Dr. Linda Mental Show is a production of WWMC Radio, Lynchburg, Virginia.